The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler, and this is the final edition Radio Hour.
We're suffering from crisis fatigue this week. In fact, we're beginning to wonder if those end times nuts might actually be onto something. Satire does not seem to be improving the world.
Yeah, and Ebola and ISIS are beginning to mush together. They're both viruses, right? And there's no cure for them. Same for Boko Haram. Why does that always remind me of this?
I thought there was a truce in Gaza, but no. Hamas is back firing rockets at Iron Dome, which is kind of like egging the principal's house, while the IDF has gone back to its policy of 1,800 eyes for an eye.
And speaking of God, or the lack thereof, only he or she knows who's being disemboweled and having their nuts cut off in Syria, or being shot out of the sky in Ukraine.
So, we're in escapist mode this week, focused on sweet monkeys humping their brains out and guys who talk in Elvis Costello lyrics.
Whee! And reviews of World War I on Yelp, and the hot dog chain Wiener Schnitzel, and those darn sinkholes in Siberia.
Even the satire we have is 40 years old. Exactly 40 years old. A long ago National Lampoon treasure of John Belushi getting Nixon to admit he did do all that stuff in Watergate.
So forget the signs of end times, hang on to your hats and sanity, and away we go with
the final edition Radio Hour.
There it is.
News from Washington. After Congress has filed a lawsuit and made rumblings about impeachment, many people are wondering why President Obama does not fire back more strongly. Well, today the president gave his reason. Congress has been using a human shield strategy, firing these scattered legal charges out of populated residential areas.
I know the strategy here. They'll hope I'll sue, causing collateral damage in, surrounding areas. So Republicans can hold up civilian women and children and, claim... We hurt them intentionally.
House Speaker John Boehner disagreed.
We're not holding women and children hostage just because we're firing these various charges against the president out of maternity wards and preschools. The president does not fire back because he's weak and he has no plan and he knows it.
What if I told you the president is retaliating with countercharges against you right now?
This president is intentionally hurting women and children.
This week saw the 100th anniversary of World War I. Over the last century, connoisseurs of insane, cataclysmically stupid human conflicts have named it one of the most spectacular, breathtaking, emotionally engaging, unforgettably costumed and directed examples of unrelenting butchery and inconceivable brutality ever realized. Whatever your tastes, they say, this was a war you could really get your teeth into. A war that really satisfied people's hunger for blood, guts, mud, dismembered limbs, and rotting corpses. But how did the conflict's actual participants see it? During a recent stay in an ancient cheese store in a village in northern France, our Lou Grossberger came across some soggy old documents that give us an amazing look at how they reviewed World War I.
Mein Gott! I give it 4 stars. I'd never heard of this great war until some acquaintances from Germany came by and insisted that my friends and I try it. So the combat was much too noisy. When the ambience was crap, I found a rat in my trench. The sheer scale of the conflict was exquisite, and the stupendous shelling literally took my breath away. Kudos to the artillery spotters.
I'm Final Edition news correspondent Brock Wilson, reporting live from the Mexico border in Brownsville, Texas. Today I'm speaking with Mr. and Mrs. Cowspit, who are local residents that have offered refuge to several immigrant children and teenagers amid the current border crisis. Mrs. Cowspit, how did you and your husband decide to help these destitute children?
Well, Brock, my husband...
husband, Daryl, and I have many of our own children, and it would just break our hearts if they were over there on the other side, all stuck with no place to go and no one to take them in. And it's just what Jesus would do.
That's very noble of you, and of Jesus.
And our kids are lazy, can't get them to do nothing.
Besides, we have a real big place with lots of land, so there's plenty of
room. Hi, I'm Tony Hendrick.
Maybe they'd like to take some of our kids in exchange.
This is the final edition radio hour.
Probably teach them some things.
We're suffering from crisis fatigue this week. In fact, we're beginning to wonder if those end times nuts might actually be onto something.
Oh, and where did you learn how to speak fluent Spanish, Mr. Calspit?
Seem to be improving the world.
The war,
and Ebola and ISIS are beginning to mush together. They're both viruses, right? And there's no cure for them. Same for Boko Haram. Well, why does that always remind me of this?
That's where I learned it.
I see.
Yeah, and them kids take orders a lot better than my own do, so I don't mind having them
rockets
my own.
Dome, that makes which is kind of like egging the principal's house. While the IDF has gone back to its policy
them
of 1,800 eyes for an eye.
And speaking of God or the lack thereof, only he or she knows who's being disemboweled and having their nuts cut off in Syria or being shot out of the sky in Ukraine.
So we're in escapist mode this week. Focused
on the Rio Grande Valley.
So there's lots to keep them busy.
But technically that would be
and reviews of World War I on Yelp and the hot dog chain Wiener Schnitzel and those darn sinkholes in Siberia.
Even the satire we have is 40 years old.
Exactly. Yeah, and the way I figure it,
long ago, National Lampoon treasure, will be John Belushi getting Nixon to admit he did do all that stuff.
If they get to stay there.
So forget the signs of end times, hang on to your hats and sanity, and away we go with the final edition radio.
And how do you like staying with the Calspits?
Mr. Daryl is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever met in my life.
See? They're happy.
Now that I said the thing you wanted me to say, Mr. Daryl, may I go back to my dirt pile, por favor?
What?
Gracias.
of course, dear child. We're all about the love here, and Jesus, and the First Amendment.
Clearly. Well, thank you for that inspiring story, Mr. and Mrs. Calspit. I truly don't know where our country would be if it wasn't for decent, caring citizens such as yourselves.
I do. The shitter. That's where you'd be.
Indeed. This has been Brock Wilson reporting from the border about the crisis at the border, which is still continuing on the border.
Now get off my land, you homophile!
Final edition, Ask the Man on the Street. What is your opinion of the mysterious sinkholes in Siberia?
Get a load of that hole.
They found out where that hole is in Russia. It's in their foreign policy. People...
Well, at least there's a big place we can put all the Jews. What?
Even Russia is trying to escape Russia.
I haven't seen this much methane come out of a Russian sinkhole since Yakov Smirnov shit on my chest.
I had diarrhea once.
I haven't seen a Russian hole that big since I got married. To a Russian.
Hi, I'm Susie Neverwet for the final edition Radio Hour. My new royal friend, Prince George of Cambridge, just celebrated his very first birthday. Mama Kate, Duchess of Cambridge, decreed a low-key celebration for the tiny blonde bombshell. But there's nothing low-key about our diminutive dreamboat who's wowed the whole white world with his chubby cherry cheeks and uncanny sense of where the camera's pointed. We've been lucky enough to score a post-first birthday interview with everyone's favorite little royal parasite. Right now, he's entertaining a few guests beside the pool in Buckingham Palace, London, England. Hello, little Prince George.
Who the fuck's this?
This is Susie Neverwet of the Final Edition Radio Hour in New York City. I had a lovely little chat with you last April, right after your triumphant tour down under.
Fucking hell, not you again. I thought you yank cunts hated royalty.
Oh no, we love the gilded fairy tale life of the British royals.
You're fucking joking. What about my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa, George III?
Well, he was a tyrant.
I don't know what the fuck that means. But you were horrible to George III, and he was mental, wasn't he, poor old sod? When I'm George VII, I'm gonna fucking get you fuckers for what you did to him.
That is so sweet and loyal. You must love your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather so much. That's why we commoners look up to you royals. What does that mean, get you fuckers?
Crush you, bomb you, kill you. Crush you, bomb you, kill you. You better fucking watch out. I can walk.
I know. That's so clever. You're a toddler now. What's the bestest thing about being able to walk?
I can see out Pippa's skirt.
Oh, that's nice. Well, how...
She don't wear no fucking undies, does she? You can see her big hairy twat.
I'm told you can swim now, too.
Her twat looks like Boggles.
Oh, really? Who's Boggles?
Boggles is my favorite toy. All soft and furry and fluffy, like her twat.
Boggles is an animal?
Nah, fucking shellfish. You fucking stupid. Boggles is my fucking pussy.
What else are you going to do now that you're one?
Bonk a bitter English muffin, just like my Uncle Harry.
What's bonking?
You know, bonking. My Uncle Harry does it to my babysitter, Portia, whenever she's over. He says to me, now, Georgie Porgy, I'm going to bonk a bit of English muffin. Then they get into bed and try to squash one another. Really hard. Squash, 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 squash. Sometimes he has a drink from her chest, just like I do with me mum. I want to do that. Bonking.
Wow. In front of an innocent child? Little Prince George, do you know what they're actually doing?
Of course I fucking do. You are fucking stupid. They're fucking bonking. I want a fucking bonk. I want a fucking bonk Porsche. Like Uncle Harry. Like Grandpa bonks the lady horse. Like Great-Grandpa bonks the corgis.
Well, I guess, bonking is a grand tradition among the royals of the family Windsor. And our cute little royal heartthrob is just one more step in that wonderful tradition. So, Your High Chair Highness, do you have any cute little final words for us Americans?
I can see Pippa's twat.
Good night, sweet prince.
Go fucking bonk yourself.
Final Edition Radio Hour. We'll be right back.
New for 2014, the Ford Dodge Heavy 2-ton Hump Truck. Hump the forest. Hump those wildlife. Hump the planet. Guzzle that gas. Hump the global warming pussies. Hump that pussy cyclist.
Remember, speed kills.
Guaranteed to enlarge the average penis 4 to 6 inches. So you can hump the whole wide world. Losers, show your buddies who's boss.
Please drink responsibly. Do not attempt this maneuver.
A Ford Dodge Heavy 1-ton hump truck. You want one. You know you want one.
No human male should be allowed to operate this vehicle.
Call your tri-state Ford Dodge Heavy dealer.
Do it now.
Ford Dodge Chevy is not liable for injury or fatality purchasers of this vehicle inflicted on themselves or others. Manufacturer is aware of conclusive research showing cars and trucks to be the single most stupid and lethal form of mass transportation, causing death, acute death, sudden death, slow lingering death, death by water, fire, ice, cliff, tree, and road rage, amputation, brain damage, limb loss, head loss, child loss, organ failure, quadriplegia, obesity, asthma, 48 forms of terminal cancer, acute pedestrian fatality, eco-Armageddon, intergalactic greenhouse gas effect, and bourgeois complacency. But manufacturers will have no liability for the effects of operating this vehicle on or off roads, bridges, tunnels, dead ends, beaches, rivers, lakes, outside or inside malls, supermarkets, box stores, hotels, banks, restaurants, churches, temples, casinos, schools, daycare centers, or saloons.
You own a lethal weapon. Now drive a lethal weapon.
Oh my God! Please, slow down!
Out of my way, pussy!
Give the First World War 3 stars. I wasn't a fan of previous conflicts between France and Germany, but this time they've nailed it. The Western Front serves up the biggest, bloodiest battles I've ever tasted, and this new entry, the, quote, tank, unquote, is an exciting addition to the weapons menu. If there's any disappointment, it's the Russian Front. Hard to get to, and a bit raw for my taste. But chacun a son goût.
Up to your waist in water, up to your eyes in sun, and using the kind of language that makes the sergeant blush. Who wouldn't join the army?
Sunny day, sweeping the clouds away.
In light of the recent controversy regarding the racism of Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling, the Final Edition Radio Hour has learned that Sesame Street's Elmo is just as disturbingly racist. We found hidden audio produced by longtime Elmo girlfriend, Abby the Fairy. Please be warned, what you're about to hear may be too upsetting to some listeners.
Abby, Elmo heard that you've been counting to 5 with Cookie Monster and Grover.
Of course, Elmo, learning with friends is fun.
Cookie Monster and Grover are blue bastards, Abby. Elmo doesn't want you hanging around with blue bastards. Elmo is surprised Abby still has her fucking wand. Those blue bastards steal everything.
Elmo, I don't understand. I don't see your views. I wasn't raised the way you were raised.
Well then, if Abby doesn't feel as Elmo feels, don't come to Elmo the Musical. Don't bring those blue bastards, and don't come.
Oh, do you know that Sesame Street is filled with blue monsters that have learned how to read with you, right?
Abby, does Elmo know? Elmo knows. Elmo supports them and gives them cookies and Super Grover's stupid cape and toy cars and places to go night-night. Who gives it to them? Does someone else give them to them? Alan? Gordon? Any of those useless fucking humans? Does Elmo know that Sesame Street has... Who makes Sesame Street? Those blue bastards serve their purpose for Elmo's world when Elmo has use for them. When Elmo has use for them!
Even estranged character Harry Monster was unfortunately brought into the conversation when it was revealed that Abby and Harry Monster appeared on a lunchbox together.
Elmo, if it makes you happy, I will remove all the blue monsters from any other lunchboxes. I thought he was okay because he's lighter than the other ones.
Abby... Abby thinks Elmo is a racist and wouldn't, you know...
I don't think you're a racist, Elmo.
Abby thinks Elmo is an evil heart.
Elmo, why can't you change your ways? This racism is not welcome here on Sesame Street.
Elmo says that there's no racism here. It says our red monsters are 150% superior to blue monsters. If Elmo doesn't want you walking down Sesame Street with a blue bastard... Is that racism?
The Sesame Street community is obviously shocked. Oscar the Grouch announced today that he would review the tapes and make a decision regarding Elmo's future in his featured segments, Elmo the Musical and Elmo's World. In other news, Big Bird has been throwing birdseed at Telly and Murray Monster, yelling at them to get off his lawn.
And now with an editorial on the recent death of former White House Press Secretary James Brady. Here is author Jim Earle.
So you think Jodie Foster's impressed now?
That was Jim Earle with an editorial on the recent death of former White House Press Secretary James Brady.
I give it just one star. When I enlisted, I was led to believe that this would be a quick, fun fight with lots of opportunity for advancement in rank and personal glory. Instead, I found it to be an appalling quagmire of carnage and mindless destruction. Also, the food is subpar. Having chosen to desert, I won't be returning to this war, and I cannot recommend it to anyone who really cares about fine dining.
Hello, I'm David Dye, and welcome to the World Cafe. Today we feature an artist you've never heard of and won't be that impressed by, but I'll be captivated by every single note. However, before we do, the World Cafe was sifting through some very old tapes on a lonely Sunday afternoon and found the lost audio of some of the most vicious fights from soft rock history. Brace yourself as we take you backstage to the Akron Civic Theater in 1981 for the riot that almost ended Air Supply.
Graham?
Yes, Russell?
I thought it was agreed that I was going to wear my orange sweater for this leg of the tour.
I thought it was still my turn to wear my orange sweater.
Whoa. The tension is palpable. Wait till you hear what happens next.
Let me keep wearing my orange sweater. And when we get to Iowa, you can wear this orange sweater.
It doesn't really fit as well as mine.
You can stretch it.
My God. But just as the city of Akron was about to be burned to the ground, this happened. Hold on.
Graham Russell, isn't it funny that your last name is my first name? And we didn't even plan that.
Russell Hitchcock. I never thought of that before. It is funny.
Ha! Yeah.
Wow! Chaos averted. And here is a delicious tidbit from the threat of constant violence that followed REO Speedwagon wherever they traveled.
Where's my chamomile tea? There must be chamomile tea or I can't go on. Where is it? Oh, there it is.
That was simply uncomfortable to listen to. Then, there is the famous fight that almost broke up Peter, Paul, and Mary. This was captured during a live performance at the Bitter End in New York City, 1963.
Hold on, everybody. Peter, when you say puff, go up. You go up a little.
Mary, I wrote it. I think I know what to do when I sing puff.
Peter, just try it. Hold on, everybody. You're about to see something special.
Okay. Puff, the magic dragon. Mary, you're right. Let's hug. Everybody hug.
Oh, the humanity. If that wasn't the definition of tension, I don't know what is. Then there is Carly Simon.
I'm gonna tell you fuckers something. If Carly Simon doesn't get some fucking cocaine, a fucking foot massage, and red grapes, none of you are gonna have a cock and balls in 30 seconds. I'll rip all those fuckers off. Yes, I am so vain, I think I'll rip your balls off. Get me that fucking cocaine!
That was a typical Tuesday for Carly Simon. Join us next week on the World Cafe, where we will have Smash Mouth in studio. We'll pretend they are still relevant. I'm David Dye.
Coming soon, the exciting world of newspaper reporters. It's the 21st century take on a classic screwball comedy, The Front Page. It's the story of crackerjack tabloid reporter Hildy Johnson, who's decided to leave the news game for a high-paid job in advertising. But first, she's got to get past her boss, that wily son of a gun, Walter Burns. Watch the frenzy as Hildy makes her big announcement in a modern newsroom.
All right, everybody, I'm quitting the newspaper game and going to New York for a big deal job in advertising. Going to have a real life for a change, unlike you suckers. Hello? Anybody here?
Hello?
You're Eddie, right? You're the web guy. Where's everyone else?
Well, most of them got laid off.
Really?
Yeah. The rest of them are working from home. Or they file stories out of their cars.
Oh. Well, I'm leaving the news game. Eddie, I'm getting a job in New York. What do you think of that?
Okay.
But there's one last story I'm working on. A guy's on death row, and he may be innocent.
Fine.
So, it's my last day. Guess I'll file that big story.
Yeah. Well, when you're done, write 11 more stories.
11 more stories? About what?
I don't care. Steal them from Wikipedia. But that's how this paper's running now. You gotta post 12 stories a day, and one of them has to go viral.
Say, where's my wily editor, Walter Burns?
He left the news game for some big shot job in advertising.
A front page coming to every newspaper near you for the last 10 years.
Carl Bernstein once told me, "Tony, if it hadn't been for the National Lampoon, Nixon would never have resigned." He was only half joking. NatLamp, then at the height of its popularity, jumped on the Watergate scandal right from the beginning, in the spring and summer of 1973. Its savage and accurate satire of Nixon's White House staff and administration helped create, early in the two-year saga, an atmosphere of deep skepticism and distrust about their attempts to silence dissent, especially on campus. We said the things no one else would say, but were thinking. Eventually, it helped drive a deeply corrupt criminal from the presidency, along with his even more corrupt vice president, Spiro the Sleazoid Agnew. At least Spiro went to jail. Nixon, to Gerald Ford's everlasting shame, walked. The chunkiest piece of NatLamp Watergate satire was an album, its third, called The Missing White House Tapes. It started out as a single, released in late 1973, a brilliant re-editing by Irving Kirsch of Nixon's actual lies and stalling on Watergate, which made him admit his guilt. It was a hit, and in 1974, well before Nixon resigned, we expanded it into an album. Side One parodies the then popular Greatest Hits tapes, which were sold on late-night television. The legendary Zal Yanofsky of The Loving Spoonful plays the pitchman, B.B. Rebozo, Nixon's chief bagman, and Mr. Fix-It, as he sells Nixon's greatest hits.
Hey, compadre G, it's me, your old schifozo, B.B. Rebozo, with an offer you can't refuse. We're gonna bring you a complete collection of the White House basement tapes, courtesy of the Republican Party. What a party, ha ha. You're gonna get all the greatest themes of the Nixon years, including this classic hit.
When I was inaugurated for a second term this past January 20th, I gave each member of my cabinet and each member of my senior White House staff a special four-year calendar with each day marked to show the number of days remaining to the administration. In the inscription on each calendar, I wrote these words: "The end justifies the means. Two wrongs make a right. I should come first, and this nation second."
That's so beautiful, it makes me sick. But you're also going to get something that old fungal Sirica ain't never going to get. No way, no how, no time.
The two tapes did exist. I think I know what is on these tapes from having listened to some, and I can assure you that those tapes will prove these things without question. Turning to April 15th, the conversation referred to there was at the end of the process, in which Mr. Dean came in to tell me what he had told the U.S. attorneys that day. Mr. Dean, 3 weeks ago, I spoke to you about the our policy for meeting it.
I didn't know much about it.
When I spoke to you, I indicated that had turned the into a major crisis.
Hunt has been promised executive clemency.
I asked to help deal with this son of a...
There are money demands being made by the 7 convicted defendants.
We'll make a very substantial contribution to our... But there is much more to be done. First, the fifth step involves... But we will have to plan for it more carefully.
Obviously, this area would have to be researched.
Nothing we do can succeed, however, without the full cooperation of...
Mr. Haldeman, Mr. Ehrlichman.
All of you must endure real hardship. For my part, I pledge to do everything in my power to... all the American people. I intend to... the American people on a regular basis. Let me conclude by restating our overall objective. It can be summed up in one word. That word is...
And you're going to fall right on your labanza when you hear this. Listen good.
I have a quality which is... I guess I must have inherited it from my Midwestern mother and father, which is that... I'm frantic, hysterical, brutal, shell-shocked, unable to act. I'm a tyrant, dictator, and I should be impeached.
Yes, compadre, you're going to get everyone in Nixon's ears except the lead doctor of maternity hospital in downtown Hanoi. Hey, in this beautiful tape, you're going to want to lock her away in your safe deposit box forever and ever.
I want these to be the best days in America's history. Because I love America. I deeply believe that America is the hope of the world. And I know that in the quality and wisdom of the leadership America gives lies the only hope for millions of people all over the world. That they can live their lives in peace and freedom. We must be worthy of that hope in every sense of the word. Tonight, I ask for your prayers to help me in everything that I do throughout the days of my presidency to be worthy of their hopes. God bless America, and God bless each and every one.
Hey, Scungilly Face, don't you go to sleep, because you're going to get the one, the only, living, walking, talking, breathing Kennedy brother singing his big hit, Wake Up, Little Mary Jo. And you're also going to get two of my personal favorites. One of them is Chief Justice Warren Burger and the Supremes singing my song, BB Love. And also this exciting tape.
Mr. President, do you swear that the testimony that you shall give to the Senate Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
No, not about Watergate. That might be embarrassing. I would certainly not be standing here answering these questions unless Congress put a gun to our head. That's our American system. It's a lousy system. I frankly wish we hadn't had a system at all. Then I wouldn't have to answer this question.
Let me ask you something that I think is very important.
Would you mind asking me about the milk? You will? Fine. I'll answer this and then I'll go to the milk in the back.
Right. President Nixon, who is the author of the White House horrors?
I wrote one, and I will stand by it. I signed it.
Is that your X mark?
Certainly. I signed everything I can this way.
I'll ask you, as a lawyer, if you do not think that surreptitious entry or burglary and the electronic surveillance and penetration constituted a violation of the Fourth Amendment?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I specifically ordered the entrance into Dr. Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. I personally thought it was a stupid thing to do.
Did you advise the participants that they were essentially participating in a conspiracy to commit a crime?
There are some things about this I haven't told them, but we saved half the cost.
President Nixon, isn't it the fact that you didn't want the American people to find out about it?
Yes. There was something on those tapes that wouldn't be wise to get out. And I directed the White House counsel, Mr. Bizarre, to keep the recording from the public, to make sure that there are difficulties in hearing them. I mean to suggest by that the judge, by listening to them, will not be able to get the facts.
What about the raising of funds to pay off the defendants?
Mr. Hunt's attorney asked for $120,000 in money to be paid to him, or he would tell things about Watergate. Now, why did I pay this amount? It wasn't because of the deductions for, shall we say, a cattle ranch, or interest, or, you know, all these gimmicks that you got where you can deduct from, which most of you know about, I'm sure. But the reason was this. We're guilty of something. I obstructed justice. But then the question was raised, how could you possibly have had the money? Where did you get it? Well, I'm a crook. I profited from public service. I made a lot of money. And I'm not claiming I was worth it. I have $1 million in campaign funds. And so that's where the money came from.
I'm going to repeat a question that was asked of you by a senator anyway. And I'd like to have an answer to it. Senator Inouye asked you, to what length are you now willing to go to deceive in an effort to avoid further implication?
First, just to put it all out, I'll give you $47,000 and a 1958 Oldsmobile that needs an overhaul.
Let me ask you about one more piece of testimony. The meeting on March the 22nd, which you had with Mr. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and Dean.
That weekend, I was in the John with Mr. Peterson. No, seriously, I hold that it probably doesn't make any difference whether they're tried or not, because that's our American system. I know that this group has asked very good questions and very appropriate ones. I was hoping you'd ask me about the milk. Well, since you haven't raised some of these subjects, I'll raise them myself. This administration, in 1971, raised the support price for milk as a quid pro quo for a promise by the milk producers that they would contribute substantial amounts, anywhere from 100,000 to 2 million to 10 million to our campaign. And that's why it was done. And that's the truth.
Yes, so you're going to get every one of the famous Watergate tapes. And Dickie Nixon, he's going to give them to you free. That's right. Free, free, free. Because that way, he gets another $500,000 tax deduction.
But if you feel you need more information, write to me, and I'll give it to you for $300,000.
Just send me your checks, or your money orders, or your sister, your finger, your dirty shorts, anything you got. The Vesco Enterprises, Nicaragua. Listen, Honduras, anywhere, we're going to find you. You find us.
Good evening. Now that most of the major witnesses in the Watergate phase of the Senate committee hearings on campaign practices have been heard, the time has come for me to speak out about the charges made for the American people. I shall not attempt to deal tonight with the facts. My effort throughout has been to hide the facts. On May 22nd, before the major witnesses had testified, I issued a detailed statement addressing the charges that had been made against the president. My statement has been contradicted by every witness in a position to know the facts. And I state tonight, I had prior knowledge of the Watergate break-in. I took part in subsequent cover-up activities. I engaged in illegal campaign tactics. On September 12th, at a meeting that I held with the cabinet, the senior White House staff, and a number of legislative leaders, Attorney General Kleindienst reported on the investigation. He told us it had been the most extensive cover-up since the assassination of President Kennedy. I relied on the best law enforcement agencies in the country to cover up the truth. I believed they had done so, just as they believed they had done so. Turning now to the basic issues which have been raised by Watergate, I stand for excessive partisanship, for enemy lists, for efforts to use the great institutions of government for partisan political purposes. The institutions of government must be used against the people. Those who insisted on the old restraints must be punished, brutally suppressed, shouted down, or even physically assaulted. If there are laws we disagree with, let us work to change them. But let us not obey them until they are changed. Many have urged that in order to help prove the truth of what I have said, I should turn over to the special prosecutor and the Senate committee recordings of conversation that I held in my office or on my telephone. However, the tapes implicate the president personally in the illegal activities that took place. If I were to make public these tapes, no one would want to speak to me. Thank you, and good evening.
Bonus time! Bonus time! You send away right now, you're gonna get free at no extra cost to you. The other side of this record, tanto, prego, dago, cha, linguini, help, I'm running out, I'm a Cuban.
P.S. The album was nominated for a Grammy as Best Comedy Recording of 1974.
Welcome to Bonobo Court. Bonobos are a species of monkeys that resolve all of their conflicts by having sex. The case you're about to see is real. So is the sex. The litigants have agreed to resolve their conflicts here in our forum, Bonobo Court. Now entering the courtroom. This is the plaintiff. She claims she was cheated out of something she can't remember because the defendant repeatedly mounted her. This is the defendant. He claims she loved every second of it. He's filed a counterclaim for more sweet bonobo jelly roll. Now, here's our bailiff, Lusty Burrell.
All rise for the Honorable Judge Marilyn and I do mean rise.
Very impressive. I've read your complaints, and I know you've been bunny-humped. Now, what are you alleging?
All I know is there was some sort of disagreement, and the defendant had me doing squats in the cucumber patch until my ass was bright red and swollen.
Your Honor! We're apes! All of our asses are always bright red and swollen. I object!
It's about time. Approach the bench and get ready.
Oh! What about my objection?
What was it?
I don't remember, but I object again! Oh, yeah!
Wait, Your Honor, I want to file a motion. How about this one?
Oh my God, yes. Now try going side to side. Yes, yes. Bailiff, remove this man. That's it. Now put him back on. Okay, off. On, off, on. Now jump in yourself, bailiff.
Oh yeah.
Yes, yes. Ardor in the court.
Your Honor, what should I do if I want to appeal?
You might try a Brazilian wax, but what you got is working for me, girl.
The litigants for the next case are now entering the courtroom. And they're just hopping on.
Belly flop!
Okay, that'll do it for this edition of Bonobo Court. Remember, next time you have a conflict, don't take the law into your own hands. Take them to court. Bonobo Court. Okay, somebody slide over or off or something. Oh, I see an opening. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
5 stars. Superb. I came here with a party of 1,600. And though we were walk-ins, we were immediately shown to the front lines. About 650 of us had the Somme, while the others opted for the Verdun special. We were more than satisfied, and a few of us even survived. I'll definitely be coming back for more, not necessarily by choice, and I can't wait to see what surprises those wizards, Ludendorff and Hindenburg, whip up next. Yo, 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 let's keep the hip-hop hopping, y'all! Coming to the stage right now, this man has turned the hip-hop world inside out because he was convinced he left the coffee maker on somewhere inside of it. He's the first obsessive compulsive rapper. I won't tell you everything that he's done, although he did give me a list. Very detailed, actually. But he's here right now to tell you himself. Please welcome the fastidious OCD!
Yo, 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 how you doing out there? Yeah, give me a beat. All right, here we go. Well, my name is OCD. I ain't afraid of haters, but I can't touch the railing on the escalators. Compulsive behaviors, yo, I got a mess of, but that's just because my actions are obsessive. I'm laying down the raps, and I'm spouting like a fountain. Checking out the ceiling tiles, all of them I'm counting. Yo, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay, stop. I lost count. We gotta start over. Stop the music. Stop the... I didn't do that just right. We gotta start again. Okay, here we go now. Yeah, that's right. Now we got it. Yeah! Pass the mic, yo! Pass the mic! Whoa! Wipe it off first. That thing is covered in bacteria. Okay, sorry. Keep going. Let's get the beat back. Here we go. That's it. All right. Where are my homies at? Let me see you. Where you at, my homies? Okay, look. You should be in section C, rows 2 through 5, all right? That's the area specified for homies. This was all worked out very carefully. Any homie sitting anywhere else should just immediately relocate to the homie area, or else we've got chaos, people. Okay, sorry. Get it back now. Yeah, get the beat. Get with me, people. Now wave your hands in the air like you just don't care. Okay, not like you don't care that much, all right? Seriously, some of you are waving left and others are waving right and everything is just falling apart. Okay, calm down, OCD. I just gotta rap. It'll be okay. Get the beat back. Here we go. Get the beat back. Here we go. Don't worry about me, I don't care about your job. I'm down in the club, and I'm wiping off the doorknob. First I'll cut you up, and then I'll count the stitches. Then I'll worry about the germs I got from bitches. Yeah! Check yourself! Yo, did you do it? Really, did you do it? Did you check yourself? Make sure. Check yourself again, just so we know. Do it periodically. You cannot check yourself too often.
Yo, the fastidious OCD people! Show him some love! That's my man, fist bump, brother!
No fist bump! Ow! I can't believe you did that! Now I have to wash my hands. Where are my wet naps at? Yo, where are my wet naps?
And now, Jim Earle, author of Morning Remembrance, a collection of mocking obituaries, with this week's tribute to a real dead person, John Gagliardi, founder of Der Wiener Schnitzel.
John Gagliardi, beloved founder of the hot dog chain Der Wiener Schnitzel, is now deceased. Doctors say Gagliardi died from an incurable form of their pancreatic cancer, but they can't be sure until after the krautopsy. It was way back at the tender age of 23 that the ambitious Gagliardi looked at the glut of hamburger stands in his neighborhood and decided to carve out a niche with his trademark wiener. In 1961, Gagliardi opened up his first restaurant with little more than a pocketful of gumption and the maximum percentage of FDA-allowed insect parts and rat snouts. Over the years, the chain became famous for its advertising mascot, an animated hot dog who runs screaming from anyone asking to know his real ingredients. Memorable ad campaigns included the slogans Dare Fun Since 61, We're Derelicious, and the ill-conceived Our Bites Are Mock Fried. Wiener factoid, did you know approximately 17 billion hot dogs are eaten in the United States every year? That's about 75 for every man, woman, and tumor. Gilardi requested his remains be ground into a spicy paste, packed into a tubular, transparent casing, and buried deep within his wife's buns. Dipping sauce joke.
For more insensitive, tasteless obituaries like that, buy Jim's book, Morning Remembrance, at Amazon.com. Remember, morning is spelled with a U, because we can't have tasteless mockery of dead people without you.
For the final edition radio hour, Will Durst here with a few choice words concerning our elected officials exiting Washington like frightened rats streaming out of sewers to escape Godzilla. And really, who can blame them? Anybody who's ever spent the summer in D.C. will tell you it's a lot like hell with humidity. Not sure even hell has winged insects the size of footstools. They don't call it foggy bottom for nothing, you know. The thing is, this is the same Congress about to break all previous records for futility. The Zero Zip Zilch Boys, who have taken lethargy to bold new heights, or is it depths? Folks who would need mechanical assists to raise themselves from stuporous to torpid. Drugged slugs, Debbie does drowsy. In essence, what they're doing is taking a vacation from doing nothing, like waking up to take a nap. The 113th Congress is destined to go down in history as the do-nothingest Congress of all do-nothing Congresses. They're the undisputed champs of do-nothingness, the slacker Congress, who have now been released into their home districts to freely roam amongst normal people beginning a 5-week recess. One question, how do you relax from doing nothing? Slip into a coma? Not just a vacation, it's a 5-week paid vacation. They must think they're in Europe. And the odd part is, they have to. It's the law. The Legislative Reorganization Act of 1970 requires Congress to take off the entire month of August. Not sure, but think it had something to do with members of the Senate being photographed in bathing suits around our nation's capital, which surely aroused a plaintive cry from the city's denizens. So, let's hope they get some rest and are ready for the tough task of remaining inactive and not passing any legislation when they come back after Labor Day. Labor Day. Sure wasn't named after these guys. For the final edition radio hour, I'm Will Durst.
I'm sorry, only two stars. This trendy conflict is so overrated. The enemy spent nearly an hour chatting behind their barbed wire, and when they finally attacked, they were surly and rude. The machine gunning, which I'd heard so much about, was uninspired, and the so-called aerial combat could best be described as crude. On the upside, at least you do get plenty of complimentary mustard gas. Overall, I hear there's a bigger and better world war being planned by the proprietors. I'll wait for that one.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The Final Edition Radio Hour is written, at one time or another, by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra,
Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, David Eskridge, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition Radio Hour is produced by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast producer Barry Lank. The Final Edition Radio Hour is edited and audio produced by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. This episode's audio engineer was Eric West. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.